On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Yeah, Jugger Punch, by most measurements, I'm back. Well, at least the strictly sort of physical, empirical. I literally just jumped into the chair only minutes ago, having arrived from D.C. We've been on the road since about 10 o'clock this morning. I'm exhausted. And... yeah, just in case the show should, the program should later completely suck, a warning herewith. I'm not ready to do a show. Not even remotely. Having just returned from D.C., I should probably be putting my feet up or kicking back or relaxing somehow. Margie and Doodle decided to get some sort of icky bug, which is making them feel just positively glorious. Not. And so I'm hiding back here in the studio for what should be, if my understanding of the space-time continuum is in sync. Yeah, Thursday. Thorn in the side Thursday. It has been a very busy week. You know, we left on Monday, and my good friend, my comrade, my colleague, Bo Webb, and I, as well as Ferg, pounded the pavement in Washington, D.C. for two solid days and then came home this morning. Bo had the bug. And was not, there's some sort of bug going around these communities, and it's just icky. It's like some sort of a stomach flu and makes you feel like crap, and I had it, got over it, and now it's come back for round two apparently, so I don't know. I'm just going to crawl in a Ziploc baggie for the next couple of days and see if I can avoid it. But at any rate, we worked administration agencies in the halls of Congress for a couple of days, trying to raise awareness of the emerging crisis in human rights and human health here in Appalachia, the so-called Central Appalachian Coal Sacrifice Zone, which is what it is. And I'm proud to say that having returned, there are a lot more people now who know about mountaintop removal and what it is doing to innocent human beings who get nothing out of it than there were before we left. And the next time we go, there will be more again. Program note, we will be broadcasting live the 26th and 27th from Capitol Hill. During the arguments before the Supreme Court of the United States regarding the Affordable Care Act, you know that the right-wing sleaze machine is hell-bent on making sure that people who get sick can't afford to go and get treatment, that we need to remain in this entirely profit-driven, brutalized sickness that is the American healthcare system itself. We will be broadcasting live the 26th and 27th, our good friend and colleague Rick Smith will be there. Our good friend and colleague Guy James will be there. It's my understanding there's a whole lot of folks that are going to be there. And then probably a couple of days after that, I'm going to do some more work on mountaintop removal, maybe returning Friday. But this is a busy time. We have to strike while the iron is hot. And that's what we've been doing this past these past few days. Tuesday and Wednesday were incredibly busy. I mean, you can run your little old legs off in D.C. in a hurry, especially if you've got something on. Well, there's maybe there's an administrative agency, and then you know you got to go to the House side, and then you got to schlep across and go to the Senate side, and every time you go into one of these buildings, you've got to go through the whole security procedure. You know, take your belt off. You know, or do you have terrorist shoelaces? I've gotten pretty good at it, though. I've just learned not to carry much in my pockets that will make it go ding. Well, I hope the audio is getting out. We appear to be sending okay. Yeah, that's me. That's me. A couple of folks in the chat room. I guess a lot of folks weren't expecting me to be home today. I wasn't expecting me to be home today. And I'll tell you the God's honest and unfly-blown truth. I don't know if we're going to make it to 9 p.m. Eastern time. I may just bail out somewhere along the way. Because I'm tired. And this is not where we cue up Bob Seger singing Turn the Page about every town looking the same and the road is terrible and, yeah, but I'm making millions of dollars doing it. No. This is not that. Not by a long shot. Because we do these things pretty much on the fly and on the cheap. It's always good working with people who are committed to ending the horrors here in Appalachia. And we don't have the resources or funds that the poisoners have. I guess Tuesday night we had gotten back to our really crappy hotel room. Oh my God. The roaches wouldn't even stay there. We checked in and we saw roaches walking out in disgust saying, you know, there are some things we won't put up with. But we were watching the coverage, the breathless coverage by Wolf Blitza of Chicken Noodle News of the Alabama and Mississippi primaries. Now, having spent the first and early formative years of my young life in Alabama, it was lost on me as to what the drama was all about. No longer a English living room drama. It's going to be a circus picture. And it was. Alabama Stan and Mississippi Stan were, this past Tuesday, a circus picture. Everything but the boy riding the elephant who got the scabies and the rabies and the flu. Or maybe that was Rick Santorum. Man on dog bested dog on car. But the coverage was the coverage was the real focal point and the fun part, as they sat there wondering whether Willard Romney and his magic underwear could pull off a significant win down in the deep south, where everybody hates him. The Democrats don't like him, and the Republicans don't like him. Because, you know, Willard is just kind of creepy. And it creates, as we've noted on this program, a real conundrum. My head writer, David in Tennessee, identified it clearly. A real conundrum for your average bigoted right-wing pasty-faced, doughy gas bag voter. Because, see, your Baptists and your Methodists and your Lutherans and your Presbyterians, but mostly your Baptists and your Methodists and your Church of Christ, They hates them some Catholics. Mary worshipers. That's what they were called down in the fellowship hall when I was growing up. The deacons would, you know, them Mary worshipers over there on the hill. Yeah. Mary worshipers. If they weren't outright calling them idol worshipers. Yeah, meanwhile, I was going to school as a kid. I was going to school with people that went over there to that Catholic church up on the hill. And they were some of my best friends. And I couldn't understand the overt bigotry that I went to church to learn. But that bigotry is long and deep. And so, like I said, they find themselves in a conundrum because there's only four people that they could vote for there in Alabama Stan and Mississippi Stan. Them are pig lickings. And conservative family values voters. They could vote for a Mormon, which the Baptists, the Presbyterians, the Methodists, and the Church of Christ find all... Well, I mean, Mormons, Moonies... Transcendental meditationers and your Hare Krishnas, yeah, they all go in the same box. Scientologists, cults. I mean, that Baptist pastor from Texas, earlier in the pageant process, who said that Mormonism was a cult, he wasn't kidding. That's really how they feel, because they don't acknowledge the freedom of everybody in this country to worship as they see fit. They acknowledge people's right to worship and their right to pass judgment upon them for doing it. And so these pasty-faced, doughy, cracker-ass idiots find themselves in a real pickle. Because they can't stand voting for that. I mean, it was one thing to watch Donnie and Marie on the TV set back in the late 70s. They were kind of cute and adorable. But you don't want them running your country. And so consequently, Willard gives them a case of the... Bleh. I have no idea how to begin to spell that. Bleh. So that leaves these bigots... Well, dang, that leaves old Ron Paul, and, you know, he didn't like blowing up brown people, and we don't like not liking blowing up brown people. Blowing up brown people's what makes God love America. And he says that maybe we ought to look at 9/11 as maybe meaning happening because it's something besides they hate us for our freedoms, like our dear leader departed now that he is. How I wish we could have his white and tiny mind back in our White House. So Ron Paul's out, and that leaves them with the frothy one, Rick Santorum, or Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist. And they're both Roman Catholics. And so it was that Mississippi Stan and Alabama Stan had their little repig-licking claverns, I mean primaries. And the frothy one came out on top. He beat Willard by 5 percentage points in Alabama and 4 in Mississippi, or vice versa. And Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist, came in second, alongside his third or fourth wife, whatever he's on. And there sat Willard, saying, but I'm supposed to be the nominee. Somebody's got to love me. If he wasn't such an obnoxious, miserable, soulless creature, you'd almost feel sorry for him. And so it was that we sat there watching all this on Tuesday evening in a really miserable hotel room in D.C. And I couldn't help just saying to myself, and said it out loud, too. Why can't they just address the issues as they are? They have a bigotry problem. Republicans like for their candidates to be white, Anglo-Saxon, and Protestant. Wasps. And they can't have it, and consequently, they're baby-splitting, to get all Solomonic on us. They're baby-splitting. And we're going to give some to that Catholic Gingrich, and we're going to give some to that Catholic Yankee Santorum, and Jesus, they chose a Yankee. See, both Roman, they chose a Yankee over crazy-ass old Newt Gingrich. And they chose a Yankee Roman Catholic over a Mormon Yankee in the form of Willard Romney. We'll give Romney some, and God help us, we're probably just going to wind up with four more years of that one in our White House. Mercy sakes, probably just wait until the day after the inauguration to come get all our goons. Although, if you've been following the story, again, I saw it on CNN, of what recently happened in Florida, coming and, it ain't going to happen, but coming and getting people's guns might not be the worst idea in the world. The young man who had the misfortune of being born with dark skin and had gone to the local 7-Eleven, no really, to get himself a bottle of pop and a bag of Skittles. And on the way home, this crazy bastard who had anointed himself the security guardian of our gated, sacred American patriotic community here in Florida gunned the young man down in cold blood. There's 911 tape of the cops telling him, don't take out your gun, Barney. Stay where you are. We'll get a cruiser right over there. And then you hear the gunfire. And the little teenage boy visiting in a gated community who threatened this idiot simply by being alive gets wasted and finds himself laying in a pool of blood and bigotry. And the cops haven't charged him with anything because, and I know, there's been people around the country said, Bob, you're kidding about Florida, right? No! Florida has a law on the books that says if you're scared somebody, you can stand and blaze and mutter lines from Clint Eastwood. Deserving had nothing to do with it. And that's what happened. Young man face down in a pool of his own blood in a Florida gated community. A 21-year-old beautiful young preacher's daughter dead in her own church in Florida because somebody, well, you know what you want to do. Oh, dear, I've shot the preacher's daughter. We're not kidding. One of the reasons I felt like I had to get on the air this evening, though, is because of the date. Every year this date rolls around, I think how badly I want to be somewhere else on this date. And dog willing, someday I'll get to do it. Who is it in the press that calls on me? I hear a tongue shriller than all the music cries, Caesar! Speak. Caesar is turned to hear.
Beware the Ides of March.
What man is that?
Ah, soothsayer bids you beware the Ides of March.
It's the Ides of March. If you go back, I think it was last year, and one of these days I just really, really want to be in Rome the morning of the Ides of March and take that walk. Kind of like wanting to see Dealey Plaza on November the 22nd. Just to see if you can wring out a little bit of the sense of the place in
yeah, it doesn't really make any real sense, but it's one of those things. These are the Ides of March. And I don't know who should beware of the Ides of March at this point in time. Willard? Or maybe, generally speaking, the American citizens of the territory of Puerto Rico? You know, they get to hold a primary too, Puerto Rico. Because they're a part of America. And after having furiously campaigned in places like East Oboga, Alabama, and West Butt Cheek, Mississippi, it's lovely, actually, that Puerto Rico has an upcoming primary, because that gives pasty-faced people like Rick Santorum a chance to go down and work on their tan and maybe get photographed holding a bottle of Presidente beer, incidentally made in the Dominican Republic and not prone to getting a lot of votes. And, of course, he was asked about it. And he was cruising right along, the frothy mixture was. Frothy mixtures do that. They sort of slide along the floor wherever they fall. But the frothy mixture was cruising right along when somebody asked him about statehood for Puerto Rico. And he gave the right answer at first. You know, let them be a state if they want to be a state. I don't know why they'd want to be a state. But then he went on and added a condition to Puerto Rican statehood. No, it wasn't that it'll screw up the flag and we'll have to figure out somewhere to wedge in a 51st star, or maybe that would mean we'd have to add a 52nd, because even numbers are just so much better anyway. No. He told El Vocero newspaper that in regard to Puerto Rican statehood, like any other state, there has to be compliance with this and any other federal law, and that is that English has to be the principal language. There are other states with more than one language, such as Hawaii, but to be a state of the United States, English has to be the principal language. They can't help it, can they? They can't. And you know, that's a good thing for us. It's good for us that these right-wing freaks can't help betraying their racism, their bigotry, their prejudice at every turn. They sit there and they kind of get all, you know, bunched up, and they're all knotted up, sort of tamped down. But then one gets out. English has to be the principal language. And there he went. That's not gonna play real well in Puerto Rico. Not just because Puerto Rico has been speaking Spanish longer than it has been speaking English, because it would be a waste of both effort, air, neurons, and everything else to try to remind an outright abject idiot like the frothy one, Santorum, that Spanish was the first European language spoken in this hemisphere, unless, of course, you want to count like proto-Norwegian or proto-oldie Swedish or something that the folks in Vinland spoke. But, okay, when they left, the Indians weren't speaking Swedish after that. No. This one got a foothold, at least among the Indians that the Spanish didn't kill, directly or indirectly. But it would be a waste of time to try to explain that to the frothy one. Because in matters of intelligence versus bigotry with these types,
bigotry always wins, and I've got a lovely example. No, it's not lovely at all. You may read, and in our crappy hotel in Washington, D.C., there was, in fact, a big framed copy of it on the wall, the Constitution of the United States, and you can read it in longhand form. You can read it in print form, where all the double S's that look like F's are reduced to looking like S's again, so that it doesn't say incongruous. You can read it up, you can read it down, you can read it sideways, you can read it diagonally, you can play find a word inside of it. But nowhere in the Constitution will you find any requirement whatsoever as to any language being spoken. Because there isn't a language requirement for statehood. And there certainly isn't a language requirement for citizenship. But little itty-bitty slips like this let you know that there is this ugly, hate-filled core of pure, unmitigated fascism that just burbles and boils and throbs and thrums away at the innermost sanctum of whatever passes for a soul inside Rick Frothy Mixture Santorum. It is there. It is there. It is there. And so I guess we can say, you know, I'm grateful. But the problem is, this kind of ignorance preys on other ignorance. This kind of bigotry preys on ignorance. How many people heard that quote? Yeah, that'd be fine with me, Marvelline. We can let them in. We can let them little brown people be Americans, but they got to learn to speak American, big AAA, so as we all can understand. Reckon those folks are measured in the millions? Because they are, as our good friend and op-ed contributor Reverbo has noted in the past, they are well-chumped. And nobody's out there unchumping them. You will remember that W.C. Fields' third commandment is don't smarten up a chump. And the right wing has no intention of so doing. Oddly enough, the Republicans, such as they are in Puerto Rico, are not likely to respond well to that. So, but this whole thing it does have the interest for me of. A circus act, a freak show. And hopefully they are making certain, although I'm not taking this by any means as a foregone conclusion, hopefully hopefully they're making it impossible for any one of these gomers to ever become president of the United States. If Gingrich really wanted to beat Barack Obama, Gingrich would swallow his pride, get out, and let all the conservative, and he really hated Romney, he'd get out and he'd let all the conservative votes go to the frothy one and let them fight it out on the floor of the convention. But Newt's in it for the money. He's probably got a hellacious Tiffany bill to pay for that wife of his who can't raise her eyebrows. What's her name? Ballistic? Yeah. Santorum ain't getting out. He's enjoying going around the country at every campaign whistle stop, flogging his 3-year-old daughter at home and occasionally talking about the family's purple lizard. And Romney is going to keep running. If he has to, strap that dog to the top of his car and drive all the way all over the country to do it. So, you know, get the popcorn, bottle of pop, sit back and enjoy the show. But the bigotry of the Republican right has real world, real time consequences. And there's no getting around it. Now, this falls under the general heading, and you know we do these from time to time, of not a sports story. Our buddy Dr. John saw this story and thought the same thing I did. We have to introduce this as not a sports story, so no, don't y'all turn away, don't y'all run off. Just because we're going to talk a little basketball. Have my beloved Mountaineers lost yet? I've been on the road. Do they play tonight? No, Dr. John found this and sent it along, and it goes, it sits as a perfect bookend to the kind of bigotry on display by the likes of a Rick Santorum who aspires to the presidency of the United States but wants to insist that every Puerto Rican have to be able to read and write in English in order to be fully American. This is the vile end of that so-called soft bigotry. It's a... The story of a basketball game played today between the University of Southern Mississippi Stan and Kansas State University, the Wildcats. Kansas is the Jayhawks, for those of you who are keeping score at home. And Kansas State has a guard whose name is Angel Rodriguez. And during the course of the game, because of the nature of basketball, at some point in time, Angel Rodriguez was fouled. And it sent him to what some sports play-by-play guys will refer to as the charity stripe, otherwise known as the foul line. This was during the first half of today's opening round games played in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It was as, and I have not had a chance to check out this audio. It might not come through. We'll translate if it doesn't. But it was as Mr. Rodriguez came to the foul line for Kansas State University that the band... And the band likes to do things, you know, they'll wave things and they'll cheer, try to get people to miss free throws, and that's part of the game. This, however, was not. Not at all. Let's see if this is audible.
As you see, Mills trying to come over and draw the charge. Rodriguez has already let the ball go, and he's a freshman, but he's about as cool as they come right now. No facial expression whatsoever.
Okay, let's...
You see Mills trying to come over and draw the charge. Rodriguez has already let the ball go, and he's a freshman, but he's about as cool as they come right now. No facial expression whatsoever.
And Joel Johnson picking up his second personal foul.
Think about some of the shoes he's had to feel at that point.
Yeah. It's a little tough to make out, but it's there. the fine, upstanding students of the University of Southern Mississippi, Stan, began chanting at Angel Rodriguez, born in San Juan, Puerto Rico, and having played high school basketball in Miami, Florida, where's your green card? Where's your green card? Not air ball, air ball. No, no. Where's your green card? It is to young Mr. Rodriguez's credit that he did not crumple under the classic Mississippi Stan racism and bigotry. No. He hit four crucial free throws late in the ball game and helped to carry his Wildcats to a 70-64 victory over the racists and bigots of the University of Southern Mississippi, Stan. There is a disease, you see. There is a disease that is running rampant mainly throughout that area of the country we frequently refer to as Jesus Land, or the Old Confederacy. It's been manifested in Georgia. It has been virulently manifested in Alabamistan. Florida has toyed with it. And now, in the home of the University of Southern Mississippi Golden Eagles, Governor Phil Bryant, who is, of course, a family values Republican, has endorsed the idea of the Mississippi Stan legislature passing an anti-immigration bill along the lines of that which has already been passed by the state legislature of Alabamistan and is costing millions, probably likely, of dollars in legal fees for the taxpayers of Alabama to defend their legislature's manifestation of the overt, bigoted, and racist will of their state. And so I guess Mississippi Stan's just rolling over in money because they're going to have them a bigot bill too. But you got to understand, there's a dynamic between Alabama Stan and Mississippi Stan. Alabama Stan likes to look down its nose at Mississippi Stan. By God, Alabama Stan may be 49th in a lot of American categories, but at least they've got Mississippi Stan to look down on. And so here it is again, Mississippi Stan's going to have to copy Alabama Stan's nasty, bigoted, so-called immigrant bill, and they're going to have to, I don't know, they're going to have to add in some lashings or some whippings or some public shamings or dunkings or maybe just lynchings to make the world see that they're not 50th, that they're going to be first in America in fighting back that brown tide. Bad enough they got a crimson tide just to the east of them in Alabamistan, but they're going to fight back that brown tide of people named Rodriguez. And see, that's where it's gotten to in the Confederacy, in Jesus Land. The band will hoot and holler, "Where's your green card?" at an American citizen, because no self-respecting American citizen would have a name like Angel Rodriguez now, would he? Even if he was born a citizen of these United States and played basketball in Miami, Florida. Well, he's got a lot of nerve thinking he's a real, sure enough, full-on American. I mean, he ain't white now, is he? Where's your green card? Mercy's sakes. But that's where we are, and I reckon where we're going to be in the second decade of the 21st century is the residents of the family values, residents of Jesus Land, the Confederacy, tried desperately to drag us back to 1858. The good old days where people knew their places. Now, like me, our good buddy Corey in the Free State of Louisville, it does follow sports, and he says, I know this is neither here nor there, but there are some people who are fans of Big East schools who were considering Southern Mississippistan as a member of the Big East Conference. Seriously. I know the Big East is desperate for members now that it has been blown up, but to go down to the heart of SEC country, where, sad to say, you would expect to hear stuff like this for inclusion into the Big East, a Northeast, East Coast, Midwest conference is indicative of how desperate college sports has become in these days, and indicative of what a sad and sorry broadcast rights, millions, billions-driven enterprise it is. There should be a memo out from the commissioner of the Big East, like, you know, a couple of hours ago, saying, sorry, University of Southern Mississippi, Stan, you're off the table. No bubble for you. Where's your green card? Jesus! But of course, none of us are in the least surprised. So that's where we find ourselves, both in the second decade of the 21st century and here on an otherwise prosaic little... My God, it was beautiful in D.C. It was kind of rainy when we got here, but it looks like the sun's coming out some. We had 80-degree days in downtown D.C., both Tuesday and Wednesday. And I kept kind of having to smack myself to remind myself what the date was. You know, it was March 13th, March 14th. And the tulips are in full bloom. As are the jonquils. And everything else. The tulip maples, the tulip poplars, blooming like mad. And it was weird, because we were ensconced just a couple of blocks away from the Capital Coal Plant, the Capital Power Plant, that provides electricity to the Capital Complex. And on March the 1st, 2009, we stood there freezing our collective took eye off in below zero weather, begging them to stop burning coal there and at least to switch to natural gas, which they did. We won that one. Three years later, and the erratics of anthropomorphic climate change have tulips blooming in the shadows of those idled smokestacks. So yeah, here we are. The 15th day of March, the Ides of March, 2012. And I'm worn out. And I don't know how much show I'm going to get through before we just go to finish out with some rerun. But if you want to get involved in the program, you're welcome to do so. You're invited to do so. You know the number, of course, 877-443-2366. That's the toll-free number. 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, if you don't need us to pay the toll-free freight, on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes in, as many of you know, and it's always good to hear from a new friend, a new listener. Email comes in to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. Chat room's open, chat room's free. It's there for you. It's a fun little adventure if you'd care to join in. And I welcome you to do so. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. On the way, we have the Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen, after which, with any luck, we will shift from filibobster to conversation radio, because that's what we do best here on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid, and we will be back. This is the Horn.
I believe I just got the good vibes. Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, March 15, 2012.
War with China?
We've got to take control of our energy future, and we can't let that energy industry take root in some other country because they were allowed to break the rules.
Trade war, that is.
What's happening to the climate fits the pattern that scientists have been telling us to expect.
March heat wave kills off spring, and summer arrives early in the U.S.
Just hold off until you know just what you're dealing with.
Keystone XL pipeline, more bad than good for the economy. Plus,
CO2 cannot cause global warming. I'll tell you why.
TV weatherman single-handedly overturns the laws of physics.
Lucky us. All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
An American president who believed in science and technology would drive the price of gasoline below $2.50, would eliminate our dependence on the Middle East, and we would never, ever again bow to a Saudi king.
Also, such a president would turn straw into gold, water into wine, and Newt Gingrich into the GOP presidential nominee. This is your Green News Report.
So you have my promise.
Okay, Des, well, as we get closer and closer to the election this year, the crazy gets crazier and crazier. This week, George W. Bush told a group of oil refiners that approving the Keystone XL tar sands pipeline would be, quote, a no-brainer.
Yeah, he ought to know.
Well, that joke writes itself, don't it?
Yes, more on the Keystone XL pipeline in a moment. But first, TV weatherman Joe Bastardi of WeatherBell.com single-handedly overturned the laws of thermodynamics on Fox News Business Channel.
CO2 cannot cause global warming. I'll tell you why. It doesn't mix well with the atmosphere, for one. For two, its specific gravity is 1.5 times that of the rest of the atmosphere. It heats and cools much quicker. Its radiative processes are much different. So it literally cannot cause global warming.
So thousands of scientists are wrong, and Fox News' TV weatherman is right.
Oh, Joe, trying to be a physicist again. Let's just get this straight. Atmospheric CO2 is crucial to keeping the Earth warm enough to sustain life. It's the extra CO2 that humans are adding that's the problem. Actual physicists like Kerry Emanuel of MIT say Bastardi's claims are, quote, utter rubbish. Even climate skeptic physicist Richard Muller says Bastardi seems, quote, very confused. Meanwhile, the planet continues to ignore Fox News. Chicago hit a record 81 degrees on Wednesday. Mother Nature has bypassed spring and gone straight to summer for much of the U.S. It's a trend toward more extreme weather predicted by climate scientists.
More evidence of the wild swings in weather that we can expect in the future as people pump more greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. That means we're in for more extreme weather.
Kudos go to ABC Network News for telling the public the facts about the science of global warming leading to more extreme weather events. The unprecedented March heat wave has smashed all-time records across the Midwest. 400 new high temperature records were broken on Wednesday alone. A trade dispute with China could become a trade war, warning China to, quote, play by the rules. President Obama announced on Tuesday that the U.S., the European Union, and Japan have filed a formal trade dispute with the World Trade Organization, alleging that China is breaking trade rules by unfairly restricting its exports on rare earth elements, crucial components of electronics, batteries, clean energy technology, and weapons systems.
Now, China would simply let the market work on its own. We'd have no objections, but their policies currently are preventing that from happening. and they go against the very rules that China agreed to follow.
China controls 90% of the world's supply of rare earths. The complaint accuses them of using export restrictions to raise prices for everyone but Chinese manufacturers. Hapless Senate Republicans, for the second time in a week, failed again to force through approval of the controversial proposed Keystone XL pipeline. This time, they added on a new Drill Everywhere amendment to open up even more public lands, the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, and almost the entire U.S. coastline to drilling. Meanwhile, an independent study from Cornell University concludes that the economic losses from oil spills along the proposed Keystone XL pipeline would far outweigh any economic benefits. That's because the heavy, corrosive type of oil that the pipeline would carry across the Midwest is the most difficult kind to clean up in the event of a spill. In fact, cleanup is ongoing from a tar sand spill on the Kalamazoo River 2 years ago.
The 40-mile span is still closed to this day. There's a no-contact order to this day. If we try to put our hands in this river right now, you get in trouble.
That was Michigan resident Susan Connolly in an interview with the Natural Resources Defense Council warning other communities about the Keystone Pipeline.
I think people don't understand. When we talk about a tar sands pipeline, this is a heavy sludge that nobody really knows how to clean up when it spills, as we're seeing now in the Kalamazoo River 2 years later. What a mess. For more on all of our stories today and the ones we didn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help sponsor the Green News Report. We ain't got fossil fuel-sponsored super PACs. We've just got you. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
It's too hot, lady. Gotta cool this anger. What a mess we made so long ago. You were my love.
It's your second hour in the liberal sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, indeedy. A little bit the worst for the road wear, but here just the same. I'm Bob. This is The Horn. I just love the Green News Report. And I guess I'm just a little bit juvenile because it's hard for me to hear the name Joe Bastardi and not think about, you know, I don't know, isn't there some rule of spelling where you get to drop the I on that little bastard's name? Right? Yeah. You know. What a jerk. Oh, yeah, CO2. It's heavy. He's out there somewhere. Brother Albert. What? Because the CO2 is... Come on! Just makes you a little... But, no, this is the Thornet. This is a real live, honest-to-goodness live broadcast. If you're just tuning in, I am back from Washington, D.C. And couldn't stand getting in the door in front of Showtime and not making the mark. Not hitting the button. And just, like I said, a little road weary. But we'll be okay. That having been said, a reminder, the phone number is 877-443-2366, toll-free. On your nickel, 304-658-3333, and we will have a run at the phones and see if there's actually anything happening. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello.
Hey, Bob. Thomas here.
Oh, Thomas. Hi. How are you, buddy?
Good. Well, welcome back. I'm glad you went to D.C. You know, there's always important doors to knock on there, and hopefully somebody listens.
You know what? People are listening. And this is such important work. You know, I really haven't talked a lot about it, Thomas. If you don't mind, I'll just tell people since you asked.
Sure.
We have started a coalition of grassroots organization on a new campaign. And it's called AKE. That stands for the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Campaign. And that's the message that we're taking. That basically we're finding out from the scientists that the coal industry has turned Central Appalachia into, and particularly the mountaintop removal industry, a giant, toxic, contaminated place.
and we're getting sicker and sicker and sicker, and we're just we're unwilling to be the mountaintop removal industry's miserable little sacrificial victims anymore. Because by the time, but if this stretches out for another generation or half a generation, the Appalachians are going to be, it really is, it's going to be something like it's going to be like something out of that novel, The Hunger Games. I mean, we're all, it's just going to be mutants here.
Well, tomorrow we're heading down to the cabin in southeast Ohio, and you're pretty much familiar with what was that big show over to the west of Big Bertha or something like that.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't Bertha, but it was another name. Muskie. Big Muskie. That was probably the original big steam shovel that I just, you have to drive by that, that site. It's just horrendous. But, I'm going to be wearing my, Cold River Mountain Watch shirt.
You got one, didn't you? It's the coolest, awesomest t-shirt in the world.
I asked Mom to make sure she passed it. I want to wear it down there this weekend.
Awesome. Save the endangered hillbilly.
Oh, yeah. And, so, you know, I was happy, you know, I was at least in a place where I could send them money. And, you know, I don't know that it's going to solve their problems, but every little bit.
It all helps, Thomas. It all helps.
Everybody, you know, any awareness you can raise and at least get them to buy in, yeah, you're right. You know, scientific study, what is it about science you guys don't like?
Well, the fact that it gets in the way of poisoning us, you know. I mean,
yeah. You know, I just can't believe this anti-science rhetoric. You know, we raved about science with Apollo. So what happened?
Well, but remember, you know, there was that core of people, even when we were going to the moon, Thomas, who said, you know, they didn't really land on the moon. That was a Hollywood soundstage. It ain't possible to go to the moon.
Yeah, and now
those people are in charge of the Republican Party.
Yeah, I just don't know where that came from. It's like, no, and it wasn't on my radar back then.
Well, as a little kid, I watched the moon landings with absolute mesmerized fascination. The first thing I remember wanting to be was an astronaut, and then I had math class, and that all ended ignominiously.
Well, I was just one of them guys that love math class, you know, it's like teach your own. It was like, you know, I took the English class and that, and finally started picking it up and started reading, you know, starting to go back and read stuff that, you know, I just didn't get interested in. It's like, oh, man, I missed a lot there. You know, so my big thing was, okay, derivatives. Okay, these are cool. You know, doing limits and all that. I like doing that. I like doing that. Loops and all that. That was my thing. You know, we all have our special talents we bring to everything.
Sure. And I just didn't have any I didn't have any real talents for astronauting.
Near that. I kind of like, you know, I see people parachuting more when they jump out of a perfectly good airplane.
I've got a friend who has said exactly that same thing. But the other day, a YouTube clip of Neil deGrasse Tyson speaking to the Science and Technology Committee of the Senate about space and saying that, you know, it costs so little and it's worth so much in terms of shaping our sense of national destiny and worldwide, you know, worldwide hope. And it rekindled a lot of that stuff that was in my head as a little kid watching the moon shots and everything. And I recognize that there's, you know, there are profound problems here on planet Earth, and until we get to the point where we can at least acknowledge that we ought to stop screwing up this one, maybe before we get to another one, we ought to make a determination that we're not going to screw that one up, because apart from the fact that you probably could create an entire atmosphere on Mars simply by putting Newt Gingrich there and letting him talk for a while,
yeah, but we can't breathe CO2.
Right. And he can, because remember, he's a Republican, and Republicans believe that CO2 is a harmless gas.
Oh, well. Yeah. Check the weather in my backyard. It's doing its little thing. March, and I'm wearing shirt sleeves. In March in Northeast Ohio, this is nuts. I have never had...
buds on the trees weather. And flowers coming up, too, I'll bet.
I mean, it should be 10 degrees, 15, 20 degrees, and 2 foot of snow. That's what I should have outside. That's not what I have. I have these chickens running around, happy as a lark, because it got, you know, they just put up with 2 months of winter, and they're just running around happy as heck, because they're not going to get bundled up. What is this?
And I don't know. I want to be real careful not to mistake weather for climate, because, you know, the other side does that all the time.
We all know that, because, you start saying that, well, you're a loon real quick, because science doesn't say that.
And I think, you know, I think it's the erratic nature of it that really points to the problem, because, like I said, it was literally 3 years ago this time that we were standing in below zero weather outside the Capitol Power Plant in the same place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know. You're talking about the coal fired one near the Capitol building.
Yeah, on the south side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've never been by it, but I know I'm aware of it. Maybe that's the difference between us and them. I'm aware of it.
And we surrounded it, and at the end of the day, an announcement was made that the Speaker of the House, then Speaker Nancy Pelosi, had given orders, and Harry Reid had given orders that the power plant was to switch to natural gas and stop burning coal.
So they're going to poison all the water in Pennsylvania then.
Yeah, see, that's why it's a real half a loaf kind of victory.
Yeah. Yeah, I just, like, I see Rick switch back to 9 p.m. I was kind of sad to hear that, because I think that 3 to 6 hour would have been great for him.
Oh, it was a great slot for him, but he couldn't thrive there in terms of the means by which he has to operate in order to remain on the air.
Sure. And then, well, I papered who's Sam Cedar, and you know, he's lamenting people. Come on, support me. You know, it's like, you know, you're getting on the podcast here. Come on, people, send me $10. You're asking for 250 people send you $10. What is that, 30 grand a year? Not like you're asking them to auction off their next newborn or anything.
Well, yeah, and you know, that's the same. It's the same thing here at the Horn. When we talk about fundraising here, we're talking about a monthly. What is it? It comes out to
$250, $2,500.
Yeah, $2,500 a month comes out to $30,000 a year.
$30,000. I'm the math guy here. I think I can do the number.
Yeah.
For you.
And it's, you know, when you compare that to even a low rent third or fourth tier gas bag sleazoid like Mark Levin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that guy's got, you know, they're keeping cash coming out of his ears. But that's because the right wing understands the value of the medium, and our side doesn't.
Yeah, and I just don't, you know. What can I say is, like, but people just keep hearing the same thing. They think it must make, what do you do, Marvelline or something? Marvelline?
Yeah, Marvelline. She's my poster child.
If that's all they hear, then there's, you know, you're in an echo chamber. You know, it's like, there's real things called facts and all that. It's like, you know, you get down south, they're the ones who get all the federal money. You know,
sure.
Look at all these poor things. It's like, who was it, Tina Dupay or something on Kristen Large yesterday? You know, she went through Alabama and Mississippi. How much, for every dollar they send off, they get anywhere from whatever money back and more. And I think the point was that for every, all the dollars that California sends off, 25% of those dollars go to all these states that don't pay a dollar parity. 25% 25% of every tax dollar they pay gets shoveled out to all the poor states, all the ones that hate San Francisco and hate where Nancy Pelosi and everybody else, those liberals that they're so up in arms about, but one for those liberal states, they'd be in a world of hurt.
Oh, absolutely. They'd be driving on dirt roads.
Well, they probably already are.
Because of some of the writing, I've been reading of late, namely Charles C. Mann's 1493. He goes to great pains to explain the horrors of malaria and yellow fever, and I guess here in 2012, Thomas, we have a hard time conceiving it, but since I had been alerted to it, I'm walking around Washington D.C. and I'm thinking, yeah, of course you had to get out of here in the summer, because it was the very line where that mosquito can thrive. North of it, not so much. South of it,
a swamp.
Yeah, I mean, a big part of D.C. was a swamp, and the place where I was born, prior to the building of the Wilson Dam, had annual yellow fever outbreaks. And yellow fever. Well, sounds bad. Go look up the symptoms and the effects of yellow fever and say to yourself, would I like to have that? Well, that disappeared because of that intrusive federal government regulating and trying to run our lives. Jiminy. The place that I was born was transformed from a place of abject and dire and hateful poverty into a thriving little brigadoon far from the off the beaten path that has spawned artists and it's an amazing place.
Well, as far as amazing place, I just want to say good night. I'm glad you're back. And I hope you rest up tonight. And remember, part of your tiredness is that the dang clock changes. And like, when this week didn't adjust it.
Yeah, I find the older I get, Thomas, that the annual time change back and forth, spring and forward and fall and back, that it tells more and more on me every year. And it takes a couple more days to get used to it. But I think I'm okay with it now, and at least I didn't have to change time zones. I don't know, maybe one of these days I'll go and live in God's time zone, the central time zone. But where? Where?
Yeah, I'm in Eastern time. It kind of suits me well.
Well, I was born in Central, and I live in Eastern now, and I've never gotten used to it, because Monday Night Football comes on too late.
Well,
but I'm funny that way. But it's awful good to hear from you, Thomas, and enjoy your trip down to the cabin. And I hope you get lots of responses on your T-shirt.
I do too. I think it's important to wear it down there.
Oh, more than. Thomas, have a wonderful evening.
You too. Good night.
Bye. Our good buddy Thomas, otherwise known as Jug a Punch in the chat room, the T-shirt he's talking about is available on the CRMW.net website, and it just says "Stop Mountaintop Removal," and the other side says "Save the Endangered Hillbilly." I've been talking some lately since the birth defects, for instance, that go with mountaintop removal. This statistic is just mind-boggling. If you take two, and I've mentioned it before, but it needs re-mentioning, because this is the gravity of it. This is why I said, another generation and, we're going to be a video game here. I don't know, maybe they'll come down here and hunt the mutant hillbillies or something. It's not like they haven't made movies about it. Take two communities. One does not have mountaintop removal in it. Another one does. Now take two beaming, excited mommies-to-be. Well, in the community that doesn't have mountaintop removal, the mommy-to-be is not being the mommy we would like her to be, because she smokes. And we all know that when you're going to be a mommy, smoking is a bad thing to do. She smokes, but she doesn't have mountaintop removal in her backyard. Well, back here in the mountaintop removal community, you've got a mommy. And, wow, is she going to be a good mom. She doesn't smoke. She's, you know, doing all the things that we want new mommies to do. Taking care of herself, watching her weight, watching what she eats, not smoking, not drinking. And let's say they give birth on the same day. The woman who doesn't smoke and is doing what we want good mommies to do has a 181% greater likelihood of giving birth to a baby with respiratory birth defects than the mother who smoked. Does that just blow your mind? Because it does mine. It just blows my mind. And what blows my mind even more is the fact that we allow it to happen, and we call it progress, and we cite share prices on the New York Stock Exchange, and we talk about the Jesus. As if it's a good thing to poison babies. So I don't know. I've been advocating that we put out a second T-shirt down at Cold River Mountain Watch. They put out a new T-shirt, and it'll say "Stop Mountaintop Removal," just like the other one does. But the back will say "Save the Baby Hillbillies." Because I realize we're never going to get a dolphin up on a mountaintop removal site or an oil-coated duck. That'd really get people interested. But maybe if we just talk about not poisoning the little baby hillbillies anymore, that would help. Maybe that would help. We continue on to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Yes.
Andy.
Hey, Andy, what's up?
Not much. It's pretty warm there in Washington, huh?
80 plus.
Man, that's warm.
Yeah, I mean, that's North Florida. If not Central Florida.
Yeah, so there's no global climate change in Florida.
No, and...
Nothing to do with that.
Yeah, nothing to see here. This is not the climate change you're looking for. Right, move along, please. And, I mean, it wasn't just one tulip or two. It was every tulip in Washington, D.C., the ones in the bright sun, the ones in the shade, were all up and blooming.
Right, now all the good freeze, they'll kill everything off.
Well, and that'll happen. Get this. You know, they tried it. They, for 100 years now, they've scheduled the Cherry Blossom Festival in Washington, D.C., right? You know, those beautiful cherry trees that were donated by the mayor of Tokyo 100 years ago. And they're out there on the tidal basin and around the Jefferson Monument Memorial. It's beautiful. It's just gorgeous. And it's scheduled for March the 20th to April the 30th, roughly 6 weeks. Well, it's going to be all screwed up this year because the cherry blossoms are already popping. But there's nothing wrong.
Yeah, it just doesn't... Timing's a little off, huh?
Yeah, a little bit.
Put a damper on the show. The blossoms might be ready to fall off by the time they're ready for the...
Right, by the time... You know, honey, we're going to the Cherry Blossom Festival this year. Wait a minute, they're gone.
Hey, I haven't talked to you in a while, but I wanted to give another shout-out to Spike. I think it's... Spike nailed it more times than not on Ray Lewis, the ex-police captain from Philadelphia, who was at the Occupy event, and Spike had indicated that was
yes.
His hero.
Yes.
Mine too. People, we should hear more about Ray Lewis. When you have a police captain in his uniform getting arrested with the Occupy folks, I think that's a real event.
Oh, I think it is.
when a police captain decides to side with the occupier, say they're spot on and 100% right, the elite people and the other police in this country should listen up. You know, there's something going on wrong. There's a great unfairness and a great inequality that some people are getting it. And others are just going down the road of listening to an authoritarian figures without thinking correctly of what is actually going on in this country. Anyway, just a shout-out to Spike. I agree with him. Ray Lewis is my hero. Police captain getting himself arrested.
Well, it takes a lot of guts to do what he did.
That's great. That it sure does. He's my hero. Another thing, too, you were talking to Albert a few shows ago, I think way back to the January 26th. Just let Albert know, everybody should know, the Saudis have come down instead. They put a floor on crude oil prices of $100. They have said categorically that crude oil is not going to go below $100, period. And it used to be $75, but they upped it to $100. Right, so again, no matter what we do here, no matter if you have this XL pipeline or not, no matter if you make this country into a pincushion with drilling, it ain't going to make a difference in gas or oil prices. Because the Saudis say it is not going below $100. Period. End of story. They have over 25% of the world's reserves, and OPEC has like 60% of the world's reserves. They set the price. Period. End of story. World market. Get it. All right? The horn listeners have got to get this. Nothing we can do here. Nothing. I know the Republicans, the morons.
Well, did you hear that clip from Newt Gingrich on the Green News Report?
Yeah, $2.50 for a gallon of gas. It was whose subsidy? The government's going to subsidize that? That's the only way that's going to happen.
But that wouldn't be free market economics, and they just love them some free market economics, don't they? I mean, that was what the last I heard.
Right.
So, okay.
Go ahead.
Well, no, I mean, it just boggles my mind. A true president who valued science, blah, blah, blah. Well, what is science going to do to create a $2.50 gallon of gasoline, Andy? That's the part where I hung up.
Unless you're going to do something synthetically to create it out of water or natural gas, you got me.
Or maybe it's some of that abiotic oil that the fundies keep the swearings down there.
And then you've got to consider that Japan is lost some of its refineries during this tsunami. Their oil or gas import, refined gas imports, are up like 24%, 25%. So they're sucking up all the extra refined gas that we make here. And they're paying top dollar for it. So that's why it's going out of the country. It's a joke.
Well, it's only a joke if we're the punchline.
And the American citizen, the Neanderthal, is the common, you know, what's the matter with Kansas idiot? Who's just doing the work for the oil companies, making them richer.
But, I mean, I recognize the inherent conflict. I mean, look, I wish there was some way for us hillbillies to get to Washington, D.C. without it, but it's one of those reality moments, Andy. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, when we get there, we ride the metro. But there ain't no metro that runs from, like, the Vienna Fairfax station to, you know, Hillbilly Central.
Right. Well, that's always the problem. Am I coming in clear, by the way? I'm trying a new Bluetooth device. Am I?
You're a little fuzzy, a little breakup-y. But it's okay. It's okay.
I could try to go directly to my handheld.
What kind of Bluetooth did you get? I'm a Bluetooth geek myself, so.
Gee, I don't know. It's some inexpensive Radio Shack brand. wasn't that expensive a device, not a name brand.
Well, they're handy as hell. I used to think people looked really funny, you know, kind of, you know, crazy on the sidewalk talking into space kind of thing. Until I realized that I no longer had to hold the thing up against my head, and now I can't stand to be without it.
Well, again, trying to save myself from cancer. I want to live a long time, but I'm really sticking to the Republicans as long as I live.
Suffer, you bastards.
Because I know they want me dead. There's no question. I think they want, you know, the Lewis Powell memo makes it clear. If you're a progressive or you're a left-wing Democrat, you're not going anywhere in this country, not in the corporate world. They will screen you.
Well, it's a little bit like what Thomas was talking about. It's so obvious to, for people who've never read it, they really should. It's not a long read. To go and, I mean, just look up Powell memo, Lewis Powell memo. What is it, 1972, 1971? And just read that thing and try to keep in your mind at the same time where we, you know, what the world looks like now. You know, that was 40 years ago.
It panned out. I mean, you can see it. Any institution. You go to universities. You go to trustees. They're all Republicans. They're all right-wingers. You go to any corporation, board of directors, they're like all right-wingers. Any executive class in the corporate world, they're like all right-wingers.
The sure, and the military class?
Right. All right-wingers. Almost across the board.
I mean, it used to be that universities... The universities, Andy, were a sort of haven of at least liberal arts, which tended to make you a thinking person, which often tended to not make you a right-winger. But Jesus, they're sitting in the band section, at an NCAA tournament basketball game, screaming, "Show me your green card,"
yeah,
to a kid who was born in the United States. Because his last name's Rodriguez? You know what? I wonder if former West Virginia University head football coach Rich Rodriguez thought much about HB 1070 before he took the head coaching job at the University of Arizona. Because his wife, Big Hair Rita, is going to hate it. When she gets pulled over and asked to show her papers because her last name's Rodriguez.
Right.
And, you know, yeah, those Rodriguezes really have been in West Virginia, you know, for about 150 years or so. I think they're American by now. Even if he's an ass, I think they're American.
I used to live in Colorado, and it amazed me some of these Hispanic communities out in the rural areas, some of the valleys, I forget the San Luis Valley, I think it is. But those families were here before white men were here.
Yeah.
They came here when the Coronado went through.
Well, Ken Salazar, who is a sort of kind of dodgy, well, more than dodgy, Secretary of the Interior, his family goes back to Coronado.
Right. I mean, they populated a lot of those areas up through the Southwest before the white men, you know, even came close to doing the Louisiana Purchase.
Well, you know, when I was a little boy, everybody loved to go over to Atlanta to Six Flags, you know, the amusement park Six Flags over Georgia.
Sure.
And the Six Flags franchise was predicated that it was Six Flags because there were six flags that had flown over that area. And you walked in, you got this little map, and it explained the six flags. And, you know, the first flag, unless you're counting the banners of the first peoples who were here for 10, 15,000 years, but of course we don't, the first flag was the Spanish one. And then the French. And then the English. And so, you know, the first two European languages heard were Spanish and French. And you've got a guy from Pennsylvania who goes around prattling, Andy, about his granddad, the immigrant coal miner from Italy, and he wants people to speak, he wants English first in Puerto Rico as a condition of statehood? I mean, jumping Jehoshaphat.
I mean, that's stupid with a capital S. Duh.
Yeah, what's the...
But the morons eat it up.
Well, Newt Gingrich making the comment that Spanish is a gutter language. I mean, you would hope the whole Republican Party would get dumped just for that kind of comment.
Yeah, you know, ¿dónde estás tu cabeza? Yeah, no, I mean, my Spanish is terrible. But it's clear that his head is up his fundament.
Well, you know, too, in Arizona, you know, talking about the, laws against, checking your papers and things like that, they're banning books now, too.
Oh, yes, they are. Our good friend Jeff Biggers is hard at work on a book about all of that right now, and it was he who noted a few weeks ago that it is now illegal in the state of Arizona, really and truly illegal, to teach William Shakespeare's The Tempest in a high school class in Arizona.
You know, Howard Zinn's book, The History of the United States, is banned too. And that's a college textbook in a lot of places.
Yeah.
Howard Zinn was banned. Anything, you know, against the white man, anything that shows any kind of truth or revolutionary zeal against the status quo is out. You know, anything against the rich man, the people that have the power with money, anything that shows that there could be any kind of uprising by working class people is gone. Don't get that in your head at all, that you have any kind of right.
No, that's dangerous.
The status quo, right, against the white man, the ruler. Don't trouble yourself with that kind of critical thinking. That place is nuts.
Well, and every time we raise these issues, Andy, we come back to the fundamental question of, is this solvable? Is this healable?
Well, I can't wait to see what happens in the next decade or so when the Hispanic population just dominates a lot of these places in the South. I don't know if voting rights come back if they can't suppress the vote. Hey, the white guy is out.
Well, you know what scares me the most? We've talked a lot about this demographic shift that's coming in the United States, Andy. And what scares me the most out of it is that there are some trends that cross racial and ethnic lines. And one of those trends is that, to paraphrase Jesus, the assholes ye have always with ye. And so by the time those demographic changes come, one of the things that I fear is that we'll get just a different class of assholes. You know, because the rich are the rich are the rich, with all due apologies to Gertrude Stein. And they want things their way. And it doesn't matter if they're Rich and Rodriguez, Rich and Rockefeller, Rich and Rothschild, or Rich and Winfrey.
Right. But definitely the rich are, it's a colorblind thing, the ideology thing. You're always going to be able to find the...
Well, that's why I've made the argument so many times over the years that it is not brown, black, white, red, yellow, no. The color line in this country is green. The color of money. And our buddy Dr. John in New York State echoed the same thing. You know, we tend to look at a lot of things in racial terms, but if you drill down just a little bit further, the next thing you're noticing is that what you're actually talking about are issues of class.
And in New York, he would know that. That's for sure. That is the most economic disparity I've ever witnessed. There on Wall Street.
Yeah, and I mean, not to bring everything back to mountaintop removal, but that's where my heart is. You know, these people that we rail about, these Wall Street banksters, they're the reasons. Not coal companies. They're the reasons. Our communities here are poisoned. Because they're the ones that fund this. because they make a nice interest rate return.
Well, they make a nice gain on their money. Bank of America, like you said.
And
that was interesting what you brought up with the Sierra Club, with the Wolves versus doing something with mountaintop removal. And how about saving the hillbillies, Brent?
It's hard to avoid at this point.
Yeah. That's just not politically correct to go after the money. It's all about the money and the relationship with people like B of A, like you said, with the credit card.
Yeah.
It is eye-opening.
Well, you know, or their very comfy, cozy relationship with Chesapeake Energy. I mean, that's over now,
right,
but...
stuff, right? No, it's enough to... You know, it's a lot of times, it's the omission. It's what you don't say. It's what you don't do. A lot of politicians are like that. They just don't bring up the subject. I mean, when you bring up the subject of, like, say, health care for all or single payer, you're going to have happen to you what happened to that guy in New York. You know, what's his name? Who Breitbart went after. Now he's gone, of course. But rest in peace. But that's what will happen. Who was the congressman in New York who got...
Anthony Weiner.
With Anthony Weiner, exactly. Well, he was outspoken when it came to single payer. I mean, he was all over it. You don't hear anybody else. It's all omission. They just don't bring up the subject. And you know, think of somebody else who got knocked off, who's Spinach. And you asked Nia, you know, mention my name when Spinach came up. I've always been a fan of Spinach and given him funding. And you look at Marcy Kaptur and they call her a progressive. I don't get it. I don't get what she... anywhere close.
Now, see, the campaign that she ran against Dennis is not a campaign that a progressive would wage. She ran a sleazy, dirty, nasty, super PAC-driven campaign for which she should never be forgiven.
Right. And she was a Bart Stupak. She stopped the Affordable Care Act from going through because she didn't want abortion written out of it. Or services for women that Bart Stupak. She was in that camp. And you look at her funding, some of her biggest funders were the defense industrial complex. You know, Northrop Grumman, General Dynamics, Boeing, God, Lockheed Martin. They were some of her biggest funders. You tell me they didn't want Kucinich knocked out. God, they were just salivating, wanting somebody to knock off Kucinich. Because they were, you know, he was just a needle in their back rear end, no doubt about it.
Well, you've got to absolutely love this latest dog and pony show, Andy, that's come out from the GOP. Have you read much about the House Jobs Act?
No, it doesn't ring a bell. I can imagine.
Well, Republicans and some Democrats voted it. Plum all the way out of the House. It passed last week. It's called the Jumpstart Our Business Startups Act. Spells jobs. Isn't that catchy? And they had them a little press conference right out at the corner of the Capitol. They like to go out there for those when it's pretty. Gets them out of the House, you know, works on Boner's tan a little bit. Takes some of the pasty face zombie look off a Cantor, you know. One of the things that it does is it changes the rules for IPOs, exempts companies from federal audits, and it allows companies to
retrieve off of Sarbanes-Oxley.
Well, and this is the one I love the best.
Doesn't apply.
Andy, the one I love the best is it allows crowdfunding.
What funding?
Crowdfunding.
Well, I know they're allowing more investors into pre-IPOs. It used to be like 500. Now they're allowing 1,000 or something.
Well, what this will allow them to do... No, get this. You're going to love this. Either that or you're going to tear at your hair and run screaming naked into the night. Or, well, it's not night where you are. But, no, you're going to love this, Andy, because crowdfunding allows business startups to raise money online by, like,
Twitter and without having to file any disclosure forms.
Right. You're not going to have the same transparency, the same information that used to be required.
Yeah, and right, you know, I guess they're just going to keep track of who, they're just going to get keep track of, you know, who responded to the tweets and how much they sent, and you know, that'll translate into a share and a half, 50 share, what? Yeah, and we can just count on them to be honest about that.
I see Obama really dropped his pants on this one. That administration really dropped him. That's the venture capital industry pushing this.
Well, the Obama administration has said, okay, we're all right with some of this, but there's too much potential for fraud. And we so that's that crowdsourcing business. But, you know, look, this is just another way to shake a few more pennies out of the pockets of the credulous, Andy. You know, when I do, and I hate doing it, you know, fundraising pitches here, or as Thomas mentioned, you know, when Sam Cedar does it or whatever, you know, we're doing it because we're trying to stay on the air. As opposed to, you know, telling people that, you know, they own a share of the horn, for instance. You know, we don't do that. We talk about perpetuating things and keeping it going and making it available for people who can't necessarily afford to contribute, that kind of thing. But we're not selling anything. This is all kindness and decency driven. But one former chairman, and you probably know her name, no, the present chairman of the SEC, Mary Shapiro, is
but I know she's pushing back.
Well, yeah, she may be. Look, if you're on Wall Street, you're hacked.
Wall Street hacked, right? She's a FINRA hack. There were the least amount of criminal prosecutions under her at FINRA than any on record.
Right, but you know, there was a situation that obtained. There was a report released from the Mine Safety and Health Administration last week criticizing itself for how it handled before and after the Upper Big Branch disaster, and it was fairly forthright. And of course, all the for-profit media said, "You see, this is the Obama administration, and they didn't do enough to prevent UBB." Well, the Mine Safety and Health Administration was bled to the point of not being able to stand on its own feet and was driven to its knees during the Bush administration, and the same thing happened, and we all know it, to the SEC, because, you know, they didn't want it, the Bush administration. You know, Obama is not Bush. It just isn't. But Mary Shapiro has at least said, you know, it's gonna roll back significant investor protections, such as there are. And a former SEC chief accountant by the name of Lynn E. Turner, said the following. It won't create jobs, but it will simplify fraud. This would be better known as the Bucket Shop and Penny Stock Fraud Reauthorization Act of 2012. So, you know, a little golf clap for Lynn Turner.
Yeah, he's pretty good. I think he's at Colorado State. They used to be. Or maybe he's at one of those corporate governance firms now in the West Coast in San Francisco. But Lynn Turner has been quoted quite a bit. Well, it's just a giveaway to the venture capital. The venture capital industry has been down because when the stock market's down, they can't get their investments out of these companies, so they're hurting. Because they need a good stock market to be able to get their money out of the investments they have when companies go IPO. And if you don't have a flourishing stock market, they can't have IPOs and they can't get their money out. So they're hurting. And they're trying to do anything they can to bolster their industry. And one thing is to deregulate. So that's what they're trying to do. To scam.
Well, one of the
pulled the strings on the Obama administration.
And again, before it even gets to Obama's desk, one of the things that's disturbing out of this is that Harry Reid has said that he sure does want to pass that thing in a hurry. While even one of his significant seconds in command, Dick Durbin, is going, wait a minute! Wait! And Dick Durbin is, you know, I mean,
They're all millionaires. And when one of the millionaires is saying, wait a minute, you know, maybe we oughta.
Well, Lynn Turner's got it right. It just opens it up to fraud. And you don't have the information to make a sound decision. You're throwing money. You're just like throwing money away. You don't know. You're taking such a huge risk. And you can't even tell what your risk is because you don't have the proper data or information to make a decision on. Because you don't have the disclosure. You don't have the transparency. So it is a joke. He's right. It's just like opening up a new penny stock market. It's a shame.
Well, it'll be a mess.
Yeah, did you see the new stuff going on with MF Global?
No.
Now $1.6 billion that was stolen from investors. That's what they just had today where a law firm, or KPMG, the audit firm, the accounting firm, just let out a list of all the investors. You know, it was one of the largest ones that lost money in MF Global was J.P. Morgan. $100 million or something like that got sucked out. So you know they were doing a lot of speculation with futures themselves, the banksters, through MF Global. But it's now up to $1.6 billion that John Fortesheim fraudulently absconded from a lot of the Midwestern farmers.
Good you know, God, that's a lot of money.
Isn't it? And I love how you always see, oh, it's lost. It's not lost. It was stolen. He stole it. That's why John Corzine should have been behind bars before he could even do that damage. You think they put him behind bars now before he does something else? Because the guy is just like a serial fraudster, man. And he just keeps getting away with it. They let him do it in New Jersey. Now he did it at Goldman Sachs. He did a lot of things at Goldman Sachs, too, where he was doing some IPO stuff, giving away shares, doing something called laddering, where he allowed executives like Meg Whitman and Steve Wesley, people like that at eBay, to just take these IPO shares and sell them, and then they would buy some more and keep selling and buying more, and they make instant profits for the top 1%. The guy's just a fraudster and a scamster, and here he was, the next senator. He gets away with everything he wants.
Well, but it is not a foregone conclusion that he's getting away, is it? I mean, there's no statute of limitations on this. And grand jury proceedings are by definition secret, are they not?
Yeah, well, Mr. Obama never looks back, though. You know, Eric told him, they just don't like to look back.
No, we don't. No. Remember, Andy, we don't look back at Republicans.
Right. But if it was somebody, you know, who was a whistleblower or something like that, it'd be another story. Somebody not in the top 1% like a Bradley Manning. Then you throw the friggin' book at them. You throw everything you got. I mean, you take their life away. You torture them. You know, but if it's a 1%er, forget it. White collar, they're one of us. Another interesting comment.
They know which fork to use on the shrimp.
Yeah, really. Nicolas Sarkozy, of course, he's running again in France, made a comment about the U.S., and I was surprised it didn't get any play, but he says, we don't want a society like the United States where if you lose your job, you live in a trailer camp for the rest of your life. Sarkozy, I thought he was our friend, said that about the U.S.
Well, I wish he would understand that some folks would like to be in the trailers. It ain't no trailer, it's a tent, if you're lucky.
Hey, when you would occupy, you're in a tent.
And you know what? With the weather shifting the way it is, you mentioned occupy. I don't know. Do you expect to see a ramp up?
Well, I've had a little bit going on here. We've got some people together from different Occupy movements, and they're doing a little bit in front of the Fed building in San Francisco. I know you've commented on that, the significance of the Fed, and yes, they are a lot of Ron Paul people who are kind of deranged in their thinking process. It's hard to get through to them that the Fed actually is a necessary entity, just the problem is it's the way it's run, and it needs to be reined in, and there needs to be a lot more disclosure, and we need Bernie Sanders and Ron Paul do have some good ideas about reining it in.
Yeah, I tend to trust Bernie's more than I do Ron's, but I'm just cranky that way.
Oh, I agree with you totally.
Well, and you know, I've mentioned several times now this book that I am reading, and it touches on economics, it touches on botany, it touches on the disease. This book, 1493, by Charles C. Mann. I would love to, because it's not a long chapter, but I'd like to just sit in a room. I'd like to walk in, hand the book with the bookmark in it, Andy, hand the book to Ron Paul, and say, you can either read it out loud to the rest of us, or we'll just sit and watch and have questions after. Because one of the most significant things of what is called the Columbian Exchange is the silver that flooded the market as a result of the Spanish conquest of, from Mexico south. The amount of silver that was poured by the Spanish into the world economy, both in China and in Europe, was so profound that within 100 years, from 1540 to 1640, the value of the silver doubloon, which became a default world currency, dropped by something like two-thirds. Because it was strictly commodity based, and it wasn't tied to anything. It was just this sort of libertarian dream of free floating market driven value. And as I read it myself, I thought, this would be fun. No, you know what would be fun, Andy? I'd like to see Ron Paul read it as a bedtime story to Rand Paul. Get Rand all tucked in his little bed with his little Ayn Rand doll next to him, snug Ayn Rand teddy bear with the big nasty drip, blood dripping fangs and everything. Get him all tucked in his little footy, dollar sign pajamas and everything. And by the time he was about halfway through it, Rand would be screaming, "Make it stop, Daddy! Make it stop! This is scaring me!" You know, all these idiots running around wanting their precious metals based commerce and God, now, Andy, I'm no economic mind, but those people are stupid.
Yes, indeed they are. There was a piece done by Floyd Norris a couple of weeks ago, and in that piece, he quoted a conference that was run and a survey that was done by 43 of the top economists in the U.S. asking them whether we should go back to the gold standard from the fiat-based standard, we have now based on the economy and basing your currency prices on the way your economy is run and your GDP and demand for your currency. And all 43 agreed that it would be insane to go to a gold standard because of just what you said. Gold is a commodity. It's like silver. It's like oil. It's like natural gas. It's based on mainly supply and demand factors. It has nothing to do with the economic viability of your country. The way we do it now, where it's based on supply and demand and based on your GDP, your amount of services and products that your company produces, your current account basis, your investments within the country, your money flow, all that basis, the currency price, is the way you want to do it because that actually reflects the true value. Gold is supply and demand. It has nothing at all to do with your economy, with your country. What it has to do with is the supply of gold on the world market. But you don't want to do something that can create a bubble. Gee, gold has been up to over $1,000 to $1,400 before, and it went back down to $200. Is that what you want to base your currency on? That has nothing at all to do with your country and your amount of products and goods and services that you produce? No, that's insanity. No, I agree with you, Bob. That's completely insane. Another thing you brought up, too, it's amazing to think of Ron Paul's history when he came to that conclusion where he saw a meat shop that during World War II said he would sell you all the meat you wanted on a Saturday, you know, busting the quotas.
The rationing laws.
Ration the meat. And he thought that was the greatest thing because he didn't believe, because of course his family was staunch German and didn't believe we should be in World War II, that was none of our business anyway, going after Nazi Germany. So he didn't agree with it. I agree with you totally. I'd like to wring Ron Paul's neck for that kind of comment, because I had relatives that lost their life, a great uncle that had his lunge singed by a bomb that exploded on a battleship he was on, and he died 10 years later from those injuries. And he never thought he was a truck driver, you know, in the United States, for God's sake, and, you know, gave his life for this country. And here Ron Paul can make comments like that we shouldn't have rationing for the troops that were overseas.
And see, the thing is, back then, if he had talked like that in World War II America,
they would have strung him up.
Yeah. I mean, he wouldn't have been. I mean, people would have crossed the street rather than get near him, because that was the height of a lack of genuine patriot. And I mean genuine patriotism in its dictionary sense.
Absolutely.
And he is, and in its dictionary sense, Ron Paul is un-American and unpatriotic, and he disgusts me, makes me sick. The only people who like Ron Paul are either stone ignorant Andy, or they are as nasty as he is.
Yeah, there's no sense of society with him. There's no sense that we're all in it together. It's everything me, and you're all on your own, and you all got to do it. You said bootstrap garbage.
Yeah, it's a combination of Haiti and Somalia.
Common good, right? There's no common good with him. There's no economies of scale. There's no pooling the society together to lift everybody up to a deep standard of livelihood. There's none of that with him. It's all you're on your own, baby, and that's it. You can't take care of yourself, just friggin' die. That's him. It's a shame.
Yeah, in a poisonous nutshell.
Yeah, you brought up, too, about that $26 billion settlement, and I totally agree with you, too, over the $2,000 per homeowner, those people that got screwed where their homes were, you know, foreclosed out from under them without the proper documentation and using the MERS system and not the system that we've had for hundreds of years in this country where you had title kept by the local...
This is a system that has essentially worked since the institution of the Doomsday Book by William the Conqueror.
All the deeds and documents and titles were kept at the municipal buildings on the local level, and then we went to this automated MERS junk system so they could securitize all these mortgages and sell them, you know, like bonds that were rated AAA that should have been rated DDD. Yeah, it's a joke. So $2,000 per homeowner for fraud. Thanks, Mr. Obama. Right. And there's $700 billion to $1 trillion of homes underwater now. And the settlement was $26 billion. Gee, what a giveaway to the banksters. What a sheer giveaway. What a crime. The crime.
Well, what a carnival midway shell game.
Right.
Well, I tell you what, when we get done with our conversation here, I hope you'll still be listening, because I've got a story that we'll send you running. It's a classic little snapshot of the 1%, and you're gonna scream, Andy. You're gonna scream. Not that that's necessarily good for you, but you will.
Right. I talk about the 1%. Obama upsets me too, where he wants to lower the corporate tax rate from 35% to 28%. When the corporations don't pay their fair share now, you think by lowering it to 28, it's going to make any difference.
Yeah, even non-mathematician, I understand the meaning of subtracting, adding, and multiplying and dividing zeros.
Right. I mean, all these studies show that the Center for Tax Justice came out with a report where 280 companies were paying an average of 18.5% in corporate tax. The Allen S. Grinder of Princeton, an ex-Fed chair, did a study showed the average corporate tax rate was only 8%. And then you have people like GE getting tax refunds. It's $14.2 billion in profits. They get back $3.2 billion in tax benefits. And many of these oil companies and large corporation banks are paying no taxes at all. It's a joke. Corporate statutory tax rate, 35%, is just a joke. Please, Mr. Obama, please.
I know. And, some of that was in the back of my mind, Andy, as we made our rounds in D.C. And I have to keep operating on the principle that there are good people who know what the right thing to do is. And if we get enough of them screaming loudly enough, that we'll get the right thing done.
Well, that's where the Occupy comes in. Got to hit them in the pocketbook. Got to somehow slow down commerce or stick it to the 1%, then they'll start listening. It's the only way Roosevelt listened during the 30s. Once you started slowing down commerce and you hit their pocketbook, that's the only thing they understand, unfortunately. Shout out too to what your man Joe Manchin, and you've mentioned many times, really a Republican, just in sheep's clothing there, supporting the.
Take it easy on me. I'm a tired guy today. Don't hurt me with Blanche Manchin, Andy. But what?
Voting with that contraception bill that they tried to.
Oh God, is that? Oh gee, many.
Bob Casey of Pennsylvania also joined in with the Republicans on that one.
Well, at least I can say this much, Andy. With Blanche Manchin, it was no real surprise because West Virginians for life can't hold a bean dinner that Joe won't show up for.
Right.
You know, he loves him some fetuses. As long as we're not making him confront the fact that the fetuses are getting poisoned in the womb by his pals in the coal industry.
Right.
In fact, you kind of remind me. I think I need to pen an op-ed about that pretty soon.
Well, it's understandable. That's true. Same thing with the XL pipeline. Jumped in with the Republicans on that one, too.
Well, if he didn't have to run for his very own Senate seat, because he's still warming bird seat as it is, if he didn't have to run for his very own Senate seat this year, he might actually pull off that Mission Impossible rubber mask and just, well, I'm back, you know, and announce himself to be the Republican that he is. I mean, I can tell you without divulging any names, Andy, that everybody in the Democratic caucus on the Senate side of the Congress understands that he's not going to work with them on anything that matters.
Right.
That he's going, I mean, for all intents and purposes, he could run as an independent and say, I'm going to caucus with the Republicans, and he'd probably be okay.
Well, the Democrats need him because he is a Democrat, and that gives them some of the chair seats.
Well, and that's the same kind of, math that you do with Mary Landrieu. It's the same kind of math you do with Ben Nelson and that thing on his head. And it's the same kind of math that we did with Blanche Lincoln.
Right.
And it's a hell of a corrupt kind of mathematics, isn't it, Andy?
Absolutely. But these guys aren't Democrats. They're doing nothing for working people, nothing for the 99%. They're just corporate hacks. Corporate hacks.
And even if you look at, and I realize it's a little bit of inside baseball, not necessarily your forte, but if you look at this recent mine safety bill that was passed by the legislature here in West Virginia, the damn thing puts everything on the back of the workers. Now, granted, generally speaking,
I don't have much for a mountaintop removal worker. But a guy who's still going underground, and I know, believe me, I'm the last guy that needs to be told about coal. But somebody who's still going underground in West Virginia, or in Appalachia, has some degree of my respect. Because, you know, my dad, my grandfather, my great-grandfather all did that. And I guess it's a little percentage of a miracle that I'm here to tell that tale, because any one of them could have been blown up, and, you know, there went me. But they just passed this bill, and lo and behold, for underground mine workers, guess whose back they're going to put mine safety on? Workers.
The miners.
Yeah, and Joe had not a damned word to say about it, Andy. Now we understand that Upper Big Branch did not blow up because a couple of guys were hitting the crack pipe on the man trip down to the rib. Okay. They didn't know. It blew up because of massive failures of safety precautions and violations of law and violations of regs, so that when the gas blew up, the accumulation of coal dust, then Jesus, it was like something. You can't do this in a horror movie, okay? But lo and behold, our so-called Democratic governor and our so-called Democratic legislature just passed a bill that compels PP testing for coal miners because, you know, that's why UBB blew up.
No, please.
You know, God damn.
Total negligence by the corporation just trying to make a...
There's going to be hellacious judgments rendered against Alpha, formerly Massey, down the road, and they're going to have to do with the violations of these rules and these statutes. And so what the West Virginia wholly owned subsidiary of the coal industry legislature and governor have done is to create a loophole. I don't know how far your legal theory knowledge goes, and I'm not trying to talk down or anything, it's just, but there's something out there called joint and several liability. And in joint and several liability, a jury gets to look at the evidence and assign percentages of blame to defendants and to plaintiffs. In the old days, it was called contributory negligence, and if you found 1% of negligence on the part of a plaintiff, then the whole case failed. For 1% negligence. Now, that evolved into something called comparative contributory negligence, in which you balanced percentages, and the whole case didn't fail. But what the government of West Virginia has done with this stupid, brutal statute is to create a way the next time a mine blows up and 12 or 13 or 30 or 50 or 100 miners get fried to bacon inside the hole, if they can find one guy and find one goddamn molecule of OxyContin, marijuana, or booze in his system, he blew the mine up.
I hear you. Joint and several negligence.
And there have been no wildcat strikes by the UMWA. You know, Cecil Roberts is just going to roll over and get his little tummy scratched some more.
Right.
Because Cecil Roberts doesn't have to go down in the damn hole anymore, Andy. He gets delivered by limousine to his office every day.
Right. In this day and age, 29 miners should not be dying.
No, that happens in China. That happens in Romania.
No, it happens in third world
America. Precisely, which means it happens in America. Now, so
it's just criminal. Massey was just a criminal organization with that CEO at the top. And now, like you said, what is over in Illinois or Missouri with a, out of Kentucky with another company that he's running?
It looks like he's setting up to do it. But, well, here, I'll tell you another story. You remember Bob Murray out of Ohio? I remember our dear friend Sue used to get just absolutely furious at the mere mention of his name. And saying, you know, when is he going to be called to account for the murders that took place in Crandall Canyon in Utah, an underground mine?
Right.
Well, lo and behold, and this is one of those, oh, Mr. Holder moments, Andy. Lo and behold, that company got indicted this week. Or they didn't get indicted. Actually, they consented to the filing of a federal information against them. And they stand to pay some several tens, if not several tens, or maybe even hundreds of millions of dollars. But as I thought of those dead men and dead rescuers in that hole in Crandall Canyon, I thought of Chiquita Banana. Because guess what, Andy? The deal federal prosecutors struck with the Crandall Canyon people was the same deal that got struck with Chiquita Banana.
When Eric Holder was on the other side of
Eric Holder was defense counsel for Chiquita Banana.
Right.
The corporate officers and the board have no criminal exposure whatsoever, and they walk away, granted, dripping blood, but they walk away. And they go to nice dinners, and people shake their hands and say, "My goodness, aren't you a job creator?"
And the fines and settlements all come out of the shareholders' hides anyway.
Well, sure.
The executives. They're shielded. It's so criminal. It's so unfair. The unfairness in this society against working people who lose their lives and these executives who are definitely negligent are definitely pushing the envelope for sheer profit and insatiable greed. You know, the greed is just so immense in this country, and they get away scot-free. And then in the case of the upper big plant, the massive coal guy, he moves on to start another company. It is just criminal. And he should be doing jail time at the very least. For the ending lives of people that have families that are missing these people and need those people to raise those kids. Just so unfair.
And brutal. Just brutal. Inhumane, brutal, barbarian. You know, pick one. Andy, it's been a great conversation, my friend.
It's just no justice, Bob.
No, none. None.
Now with Eric Holder. All right, well, nice talking to you, Bob. Keep up the great work, man.
Good talking to you, Andy, and take care.
All righty, bye-bye.
Bye now. Our good friend Andy calling from the coast. California coast. That is. It's about 16 minutes past the hour. And here in a minute, I've got a song to play for you. Gosh, I hope we don't get sued. And I told Andy that I had a story that was going to make him run screaming into the night. And this is that story. I don't know if you've read this in The Guardian, but it's there. The world has watched as unmitigated slaughter has gone on in Syria. Horror is a word that is applicable to the situation. Members of the resistance in Syria have provided a series of emails garnered from the account of Syrian dictator and barbarian Assad, some of which are little honeydew notes, little love notes to his wife Asma.
And this is a story of the 1%. Don't mistake for an instant the notion that just because one lives in Damascus, one cannot be 1%, because one damned well can be. And in the midst of the horror that he, with his military, has unleashed on the people of his country, Bashar al-Assad, via these emails, has unwittingly provided a little slice of what it's like. And I guess our buddy Jim wasn't expecting me to be on the air tonight, otherwise we might have heard from him by now. But this is going to resonate with Jim. This is a little slice of life that paints Bashar al-Assad and his wife Asma as the 21st century's answer to Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette. In these emails, the Guardian says it believes to be authentic, but cannot confirm. There's a little bit of everything. There are emails about advice for dealing with the uprising. There are emails about how to go about seeing the latest Harry Potter movie. Emails about the dictator couple buying furniture. And about their clothing purchases. And about how they engage with Western pop culture without offending the fundies that live among them, who like to walk around in, you know, tribal gear from 1,000 years ago. And in one sense, you want to say, you know what, I got some sympathy for this. Doesn't matter if you're filthy rich or dirt poor. What happens when you are trying to maintain a relationship with a spouse? It's pretty much ordinary. They're not ordinary, but universal, really. And who knew it? Lucky for me, my head writer David in Tennessee I didn't get an email out to anybody when I was coming back to air. That just, you know, literally jumped in the chair and fired up the machines. And screwed that up in the process, too. I was broadcasting for 2 minutes before I realized nothing was going out. No, it's a slice of life. And somewhere along the way, now I don't know what David in Tennessee's opinion of Blake Shelton would be. But somewhere along the way, and I got to think Blake Shelton can't be down with this. I just can't imagine a "y'all, I'll go anywhere they're paying for the tickets" kind of mentality in this. Ain't no fun doing a country music concert in the middle of the Rockets' red glare when the Rockets' red glare is, well, you know, might land on you. It's a booger for everybody. From folks doing front of house to the people who are, you know, mixing the sound for the concert goers to the guys tuning the guitars, you know, and the Rockets, nah, it sucks. But you know by now what happened to the so-called rebel stronghold of Homs. It was brutal. Bloodthirsty. And it was around February 6th, you know, just about 8 days before Valentine's Day, in which the very westernized Bashar al-Assad must have been conscious of. Not that he could celebrate it or anything, because, well, that would just get the fundies even madder.
You know, they were sending emails about that lovely sofa, or why don't we get a new end table because little Bashir Jr. Scratched it with his cowboy boots, or you know, shall we buy Lacoste this year or Polo? These are the emails that are flying back and forth. Even as Bashar al-Assad's army was putting artillery shells into neighborhoods, you know, where mommies and daddies and children live. And where mommies and daddies and children died. And it was long about the time that they were doing that to Homs. But using this pseudonym Sam, yeah, really, Sam, Bashar al-Assad sent a tune to his wife, Ozma. And you got to say wife. Okay, the accent is called for, wife. Sent a tune to his wife, Ozma, just to remind her that, well, he loves her. Because I'm sure he does. So we're going to take a second here, because we've only played one song tonight. We're going to take a second here and listen to the song that Sam, who's actually Bashar al-Assad, we're going to listen to the song that Sam sent to Ozma. Hey, this is a long-distance dedication, you know, across the palace, from Sam to Ozma. Ozma, I love you. Hey, can we at least get an up-tempo song for these long-distance dedications? I don't want to do any more about dead dogs or peasants laying in pools of their own blood in the effing street. Can we just get a yeah, okay, Blake Shelton will do. This is for you, Ozma, from Bashir. I mean, Sam. Thank God it's up-tempo.
I've been a walking heartache, I've made a mess of me. The person that I've been lately ain't who I want to be. But you stay here right beside me, watch as the storm blows through, and I need you. Scott gave you for the ups and downs.
Days of doubt. God gave me.
to God. That's God made, God gave me you from Bashir to Ozna, long distance dedication here on the Horn.
Honest to Pete. You reckon Blake Shelton knows that his music is the lifeline that's because you know when you get down to couples is couples is couples. And I can easily hear that song. And I've heard that song before, and the first time I heard it, you know, look, I know where I live. And you go into a honky tonk on a Saturday night, and the DJ's playing the music. And when it's time for a slow dance, he'll put her arms around his neck. And if he's being a bit of a gentleman, he'll put his arms around her waist. And keep them up there, Buster. This is public, and I don't want you to humiliate me just because you got a couple of Budweiser Light Platinums in you. You hear me? And they'll sway there on the dance floor, and they'll look in their 10, 20-year married eyes at each other, and they'll mouth the words, God gave me you, in the middle of that honky-tonk with the smell of Mr. Clean or Lysol strong in their nostrils, overcoming last night's stale beer stuck to the floor and the little bit of vomit in the corner. And they'll go home and they'll feel good. They'll make sure they take some aspirin before bed. And they'll wake up the next morning. You know, we probably spent too much, honey, but you know, it's sure nice being out with you. I can only imagine what the official video looks like. But they got a pretty good idea. And I just can't imagine that it's a couple of well-heeled, well-to-do, Western-inclined dictators swaying on a marble floor with a golden chandelier above their heads while mothers weep over the corpses of their little babies rent into tattered ribbons because that couple on the marble floor under the golden chandeliers is so in love with their wealth and their power that they will not allow so much as a mother's child to get in the way of it. Oh, the Guardian Idol, the Guardian article is a real doozy. Especially when you get down to the part where they're exchanging a video that makes sport of the situation in Homs where those aforesaid mothers wept over their shredded babies if mommy wasn't shredded too. Let them, and that's the brutal side of the modern. Marie Antoinette said, let them eat cake, because she didn't understand that if you didn't have bread, you damn sure didn't have cake. In the 21st century in Damascus, the dictators say, let them eat dirt. Let them die. Yeah, they thought it was funny. They thought the crackdown was funny. Yeah, I don't care who you are, that's funny. Our chat room moderator Lottie reporting the latest in the flush flimball flap. Well, that's an alliterative FLFL, flush flimball flap. That God hates fags. The virulently anti-gay hate group is preparing an ad for Friday's edition of the Rush Limbaugh Show, according to the Hate Watch blog, published by the Southern Poverty Law Center, which tracks over 1,000 active hate groups across the country. No word yet on whether the Limbaugh Show or Clear Channel have approved the ad or the organization. Woo! That ought to be a doozy. They can't take the money. They just can't take the money. They'd like to take the money, but they can't take the money. Especially being as how, as, well, you know, the latest Mrs. Limbaugh hasn't been seen since 2010. It puts the lotion on its skin, my friend! And then, of course, I don't know. I'm tired. I like music. When the show's over, I'm going to play a bunch of it. Got to thinking about this. Let me see if I can find it. Kind of a counterpoint, if you will, to God Gave Me You. By the way, for the feminists in the audience, is that just a little bit offensive? Just asking. God Gave Me You. 21st century country chart topper. And we're still treating relationships as chattel transfers. God Gave Me You. I mean, am I just cranky, or is it like that? God gave me you. You know, in exchange for 15 camels, 33 sheep, 12 goats, and a dog, God gave me you. Right? But that got me thinking about this. Because, you know, Sam would never send a long-distance dedication iTunes file to Ozma of this tune. And I'm... No. Sam is not sharp enough to be a John Koontz fan. Not by a long shot. But when you're willing to lob rockets into places where little boys and little girls play in the streets in their dusty clothing and see them ripped into 1,000 constituent pieces. Well, I don't think they belong on the same dance floor with that 20-year married couple that looks lovingly into their eye, each other's eyes on a Saturday night at the honky-tonk and goes home and shares a headache the next day. Emery and Eileen got a hell of a lot more class than Bashir Assad and his 1% wife, Ozma. Then there's this. Play it, John.
Trailer love. Trailer love. She's my trailer love. Single wide. Chicken fried. Mister, we know how to live. Come on in here, have a beer, sticker in our window says fearless. Trailer love, trailer love. out drinking. She's gonna fix her hair. She's gonna wear that sweatshirt with the teddy bears. Trailer love. Oh, baby. She's my trailer love. Now walking home, we got into a fight about our microwave. Then we saw a sign that said, Jesus saves. Now we're saved. Found our way. One man and one woman in trailer love. No more drunk and saney. Now we're Bush Cheney. Sticker in our window says fear this. Trailer love, trailer bliss.
Nah, you know what? That couple's too high class for Bashir and Ozma. Because they ain't going to go home and bomb no little children. They'll fight over the microwave, but they ain't going to kill nobody over it. I don't know. Next thing you know, we'll be getting emails from Bashir about how Ozma done got her the sweatshirt with the teddy bears. Fear this. God almighty. Oh, my head writer David in Tennessee is there. Woo, trailer love. Just tuned in so I missed the Assad tie-in. I don't know, David, how about them ears? Somebody help me here. I'm in ignorance. The only thing I know about the tournament so far is the daggum band from southern Mississippi hooting, "Where's your green card?" to the kid born in Puerto Rico who played high school basketball in Miami. Are we going to round two, David? I need a little help here. Been in D.C., John Fox writing in. So I don't know. I wish, but of course it's not there. I'd like to have Bashir al-Assad. I'd like to at least send him trailer love so he can at least have something. He and Ozma can have something to aspire to. Oh, hearing from Kim, she said, "Too bad Ray's out with the boys. I believe this is his favorite song. What does that say about me? Oh, dear." It says y'all have a wonderful and loving relationship, Kim. That's what it says. They're going to, Kim and Ray will be jumping in the Volt and heading north. In what can only be a slightly frustrated tone of email, she wrote earlier, "I swear, the only reason the weather's been so hospitable this year is that we decided to take cover down here in Florida. It's like the universe is laughing at us. We're returning north in a few weeks, so I know a huge storm will still happen with many feet of snow coming for us all." Oh, look, it's like this in the Appalachians, and we know. I mean, we don't even... Looking bad for them. Yeah, Gonzaga, I didn't. Down 40 to 20 at the half. You had my hopes up there. Thanks for nothing. Thanks for the sour persimmons, brother. No, we know here in the hills that we are going to get snow on Easter. And Easter comes in April, so we are going to pay. Everybody got their little short sleeve shirts out and their shorts out and they're running around wearing shoes without socks. Don't put the boots away, children. Don't do it. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Preston.
Well, hey, Preston.
Yeah, we'll probably get a big April snow here in Colorado. Anyway, I'm hoping so. I remember about I think it was about 6-7 years ago, we had a either March or April snow of about 20 inches or so. Had a snow day away from work, which is always fun. It's fun when things kind of get shut down.
Well, yeah, that time of year. And plus, that far up in the season, it means it's not going to stay on for months on end or anything. Or we hope it doesn't.
No,
well, no, we'll get hammered here, sure as God made little green apples.
We actually had a snow in February that was our biggest snow on record for a February. It was like 16 inches or 17 inches. And, yeah, I think moments like that confuse people about what you were talking about earlier about
the difference between climate and weather.
Exactly. Definitely. And, of course, Fox News is always on top of it to exploit it. You know, Europe had a very cold winter throughout, but apparently that has something to do with the high-pressure systems being created in the Arctic because of their very warm weather.
Right, and it hit them.
Right.
And our jet stream, you know, our jet stream stayed way to the north. So that's why all the warm weather was able to come up, you know, from Gulfwards and point south.
Okay. I've been watching the Weather Channel from time to time, and they've been doing some interesting work on, you know, the warm and dry winter we've so much of the nation has had. And, yeah, so.
Well, I got to tell you, before we go anywhere else in this conversation, I was thinking of you earlier today, and I think of you every time I think of this person. You know, you helped immensely in creating the conversation that we had with Sandra Steingraber.
Yeah, I remember that. That was
and fun. As we have created and taken forward this idea of the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Campaign, given that it's tied to environmental toxins,
mm-hmm.
I keep thinking about her and thinking that we have got to find a way to just get her involved with this, because I just knowing what she wrote about in Living Downstream, this is going to have to this has to speak to her.
Definitely, and I'm sure it's speaking to a growing number of people who are engaging on this hugely important topic.
Well, and the 8 campaign is going to grow and get bigger and bigger and bigger, and I think it's going to be the thing that we can build a national call for an outright end to mountaintop removal around Preston.
What's the group, or is there a particular group?
Well, we've got there's a website. It's a coalition among three groups right now. Christians for the Mountains, Coal River Mountain Watch, and the Mountain Health and Heritage Association. And it's called AHEC, Appalachian Community Health Emergency.
Okay.
And the website for it is stoptheahec.org.
Okay, great. Yeah, definitely. The connection with Sandra should be explored. That would be wonderful. And, yeah. Good luck with that.
Oh, we need the luck. We need the help. We need the pressure of many voices going out, to tell folks that they need to contact their congresspeople and let them know that it's unacceptable to poison, you know, everybody from cradle to grave in Appalachia.
Mm.
And there will be more about this as the days continue onward.
Christians for the Mountains. That's great.
It's a magnificent group. And by this, I don't mean like Baptists for the Mountains.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that brought to mind a conference that's coming up here in Colorado in April, I think. There's that organization called Interfaith Power Alliance or something like that. A lot of church groups working with utility companies to get wind and solar built and geothermal, and they're having a conference. They're bringing forget her name, but should be very interesting. You know, there's a lot of really good organizing going on in the faith communities. It's a shame how Pat Robertson has so, you know, and figures like that, you know, focus on the family, have so defined.
Well, I wouldn't say defined, Preston, so much as defiled.
Defiled, yeah. Well put. Co-opt, it approach.
It's only a couple of consonants away in the alphabet.
Well put, definitely. And but, you know, people are bringing it back. So it's good to hear, you know, they're making a lot of these sorts of conferences happen, and, you know, people like Van Jones are connecting with these groups. And, you know, it was actually in Texas that a lot of faith communities blocked the building of a new coal-fired plant, I think, outside of Houston.
And, you know, this Andy mentioned some criticisms of the Sierra Club, and they're valid. But they're doing great work on the coal-fired end of things.
Yeah.
We just need them to get on board with the hillbilly end of things.
Yeah, yeah.
Because this, for instance, this campaign that we're involved in is going to need a lot of support.
Yeah.
And so far they've said no thanks.
That's too bad. Definitely. Well, keep at it. Maybe Greenpeace, you know, and Greenpeace has it.
Yeah, Amnesty International, really, considering this is a human rights issue.
Okay. Friends of the Earth. Earth Justice, I don't know. There's a range. And once we start to network, that makes such a huge difference, the networking part, because, you know, we only have particular resources and access to people or whatever, outlets. But when we network, it's fun to see what happens. I've been enjoying seeing how Bill Press has been recently has joined in a collaboration with Current TV.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, yeah. And I understand some of the criticisms of something like the Bill Press show. You know, my radical friends will be like, you know, it's too much focused on electoral politics and, you know, Democratic stuff. But I understand that, and I agree with it. But he also does good, really good stuff, like just this morning he interviewed Eleanor Smeal of the Feminist Majority.
Yeah, Ellie Smeal.
Yeah, she was wonderful, very informative. I mean, this patriarchy, this crusade of patriarchy is going way beyond contraception issues. They're cutting, you know, labor-related stuff that helps women. They cut funds for, you know, protect women against or help them out if they've been victims of sexual violence. And it's madness. And it's so connected with what they're doing, with their total disregard, disrespect, defilement of the earth. It's just this war, and control and domination, the dominator story. And So anyway, at least they're getting pushed back for now. I mean,
yeah.
So
now I got to tell you, you mentioned Bill Press, and you know, I'll be seeing him in a couple of weeks.
Oh,
and he's a nice guy.
Okay.
But I really wish he had not behaved with Dennis Kucinich the way he did.
I'm sorry to hear he had. I didn't know about this, but.
Well, he interviewed Dennis about whether he would support Marcy Kaptur in the general election.
Okay. Yeah.
Because Marcy was really, really sleazy in the primary. You know, she accused Dennis of being just like Art Modell and LeBron James.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah. And, you know, when he conceded defeat in the primary, he said, you know, I wish I could congratulate Marcy, but I really can't because she ran a really nasty campaign.
Uh-huh.
And so Bill interviewed Dennis, and he said, you know, I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to support her in November. And I don't think that's it was not dishonest.
Yeah.
And B, given her conduct, I don't know that it was uncalled for. In fact, I'll say it was not uncalled for. Progressives don't behave the way she behaved in that primary.
Yeah.
And then Bill took that and, like, re-ran the clip of saying, I'm not sure, and gave Dennis a rash of shit for it.
I see. Bummer.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Yeah.
You know, you wish they wouldn't do that.
Yeah, definitely. We don't need this kind of infighting stuff. And, you know, you can understand how Yeah, I'm sure Dennis does not want Joe the plumber to win.
But no, I'm sure he doesn't.
But to say
we don't want to add to the Republican majority.
Right. So he'll probably just be.
But by the same token, I think Dennis also understands that he can take a powder on it.
Yeah.
And Joe, whose name isn't Joe, the plumber who isn't a plumber.
Right.
Is going to have roughly. The same chances in the general election against Marcy Kaptur as a wax cat does in hell.
I think progressives need to create a figure like, you know, kind of a Joe the Plumber, like Wendy the Wind Turbine Installer or something.
Sam the Solar Fixer.
There you go. By the way, speaking of Cleveland and Kucinich, and I think Marcy Kaptur is a supporter of this project too, but something like the Evergreen Cooperative, I think in Cleveland, and people like Gar Alperovitz has written about it in his book Beyond Capitalism, and it's this worker-owned. It's a combination of things: utility, and hospital, and laundromat, and a lot of stuff. And it's green jobs. It's fair-paying jobs. It's, you know, jobs people will feel good about, you know. And it's, again, another part of this incredible, powerful movement going on that gets so little publicity. You know, so often it's like, oh, what can we do? And there's no alternative to these mega corporations. And more, and this is my critique of, like, the Bill Press show, and I think a lot of the shows, Randy's show, if we just bring out the progress, you know, put the progress back in the progressive movement.
Yes.
It would be so radical. You know, I critique Romney and Gingrich and all those and all that. I'm against these wars. I protest the wars and all that.
Yeah, and you know, one of the sad things that happens when I'm away from the mic is inevitably things break bad that we can't have a conversation about because I'm gone. And you know, to the extent that My Lai was the defining moment of everything that was wrong with Vietnam,
yeah.
This sergeant on his killing spree in Afghanistan,
yeah.
That's the one for the one that says to Barack Obama, this is not the right war for the right reasons anymore. Time to leave.
I noticed on Michelle Malkin's blog or website, that right-wing lady, a lot of her posters were celebrating that massacre. A good Muslim's a dead Muslim kind of remarks. I mean, it's, again, another way in which the past didn't go anywhere. It's so reminiscent of the Indian Wars. You know, the only good Indian is a dead Indian. And here we are massacring tribal people again. Again, at least they're starting to get more pushback. Thank God for, you know, Veterans for Peace and Iraq Veterans Against the War. But again, my other point was just a fragment or a larger fraction of, so what are we, what's our vision for the future? And it's not just far off imagined utopias. It's the Evergreen Cooperative in Cleveland, you know, that hotbed of communism, Cleveland, right?
Yeah,
and so many great cooperatives and worker-owned projects, and I just found out of this author, someone else who you might want to connect with at some point, Michael Schumann, wrote a book called Local Dollars and Local Cents.
I tell you what, Preston, make sure you send me that title and that author,
okay. And
we'll work on it. I got to get out of here though. I'm sorry I got to you late, but
not a problem.
It's always a joy hearing from you.
We'll be in touch again soon.
All right, take care, Preston.
Peace, Bob. Bye bye.
Bye now. The Horns resident optimist, that is Preston calling from Denver. It is time to get out of here. Look at hey, I made it through 3 hours. I'm going to go to bed. Thanks for joining in. I'm really glad you were here. And we'll be back tomorrow night. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. You with your kind contributions to support the ongoing efforts, the volunteer efforts of everybody who makes this go. Our chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, our blogger, Texas Betsy, our op-ed columnist, Reverbo, my head writer and spiritual advisor, David in Tennessee, John Fox, who continues to work with Ben Burch on the website, and Ben Burch himself, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks, of course, go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, and you'll hear more about why I say that in the coming weeks. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next, only on the Horn.